podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Hello and welcome to All About Android, episode 92, recorded on Tuesday, January 15th, 2013. We are your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Ron Richards.
And I'm Gina Trapani.
Yeah. What's up? And we have Chad back in the house. He was at CES.
And he's changed.
He has changed.
Have I changed?
Yeah, I don't know what it is. There's something about Chad.
Something just Post a little
Vegas,
different.
Something happened.
You're not using a non-Android phone now, are you?
No. Oh, my gosh, no. No.
Okay. We were going to have an intervention. Listen, no, not really.
I was a little concerned about Chad going to Vegas. I know there are going to be other phones at that event. There'll be other people
influences.
Using.
Yeah. Influences all abound.
You get a couple. You get one of those like 2-foot-long margaritas in a couple hours.
Yeah, Long Island iced teas. Yeah.
You wake up at 10 a.m. on the strip with an iPhone. And you're
I don't know.
An iPhone 5 in your pocket.
It was just here. It wasn't me.
Red hair.
Wait, but where'd this come from?
Gotta be careful. Gotta be careful. I've heard horror stories like that at CES.
Yeah. Well, speaking of CES, I know that we talked a lot about CES last week. We're going to have a little bit of a CES, hangover with a couple of items that we didn't talk about. We'll also talk about Samsung's continuing dominance. They're really kind of killing it right now. And an arena that just organically is dedicated to things that make you just a little bit more productive, calendar apps. Yeah.
So, last week the audience member said you should do themed arenas again?
Yeah, you know, it's a request that continues to come up.
We stumbled into it.
Yeah, it just kind of happened.
Yeah,
so let's do it. Awesome. Well, let's just dive right in. Let's get right to news. So, alluded to Samsung, and I think everybody can agree there, you know, as far as Android is concerned, Samsung is definitely on a roll right now.
Could you describe them as a juggernaut?
With
these numbers, I think you can now.
Yeah, some really impressive numbers here. They announced 40 million Galaxy S3s sold in 7 months.
Jeez.
And that's the highest of any phone in the Galaxy series. The Galaxy S1 sold 20 million in 17 months. The S2 sold 30 million in 14 months. This is now 40 million in 7 months and still going strong.
I liked it better if you said it's the most sold in the Galaxy.
Yeah, in all of the Galaxy.
But those are a lot of units. These are worldwide, right?
Yep,
so it's not just
absolutely.
U.S. based alone.
Mm-hmm.
And Samsung does have a huge, you know, presence abroad. Mm-hmm. Like they've focused a lot of their business in the East and in Europe. So
absolutely,
They've
also. Sold well. The S series alone is over 100 million. They also announced so. You know their strategy, and I know that we talked about it in a previous episode, way back when. But their strategy with the S3 of going the same device on all carriers, you know, minus maybe very little things. But I think before with the S2 and definitely the S1, there were little differentiating kind of specs and features with each phone.
Little
so
tweaks.
It's like T-Mobile gets the S2, but it doesn't have this, but it has this. You know, AT&T gets the S2 and same deal, different type of phone, but same name.
I wonder if Apple will sue them for that strategy.
That's a good question. Can you sue over a strategy?
These days with patent law.
If you can, they'll figure out a way.
Yeah, exactly. They figure out a way. But, I mean, honestly, them going with a unified device across all carriers, at least I'm speaking for the U.S. primarily here, with the S3, obviously was a good strategy. It's a good move.
Clearly. And it's clearly working. I mean, and you got to wonder if how much – when you look at the mix, how much of it is – the devices maturing to a point of being not superior, but cutting edge devices, mm-hmm. but then also with the aggressive marketing campaign. I mean, like this, they have made an effort to put these phones in the hands of people and it seems to be working. So I wonder internally at Samsung, what group is kind of seeing this as a victory and saying like, see all those, those iPhone attack ads and things like that. They work. And, you know, or is the product group saying, no, we put out a great phone, that works. I mean, it's probably a little bit of everything, but still it's interesting to see what the mix is.
Sure. Yeah. Now, part of that strategy, of course, is something that I think had a lot of people scratching their heads, the Samsung Galaxy S2 Plus that they announced, which is basically more or less kind of a boost for the S2, as the name implies. It's just kind of strange for them to go backwards, you know, and say, well, here's an S2. But at the same time, it kind of makes perfect sense because this isn't going to be their top of the line phone. But it still kind of cashes in on that great kind of word of mouth that the Galaxy S series has.
It's probably cheaper to make now. I mean, the components are probably cheaper. Who knows how much they have left over? Who knows how much leftover stock they have? It's running Jelly Bean, so it's, you know.
Running Jelly Bean, that's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean,
an older phone running Jelly Bean.
Yeah, and how many times do we talk about the lower price point phones out there and that there is a market for them? Not everybody wants to spend $299 for the latest and greatest phone. Some people just want a $49 or $99 phone or whatever the the country equivalent of that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There is no release date. There is no price announced yet. But definitely, you know, for the most part, a lot of the things are the same from the S2 model. 4.3-inch, you know, same display, Super AMOLED display, 1.2 gigahertz, dual-core processor. So, yeah, I would probably kind of point this somewhere around the $150 range, $100-$150 range, subsidized if you're going that route. But it doesn't have the Exynos chip. It has a Broadcom chip inside. So that's another big kind of key difference between them.
Right, but at that price point and the people, I mean, yes, I mean, yeah, we know that's a big difference, but a lot of people are just looking at the price point.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. I was never...
Yeah, I might recommend this phone over the... Generally, I recommend the Nexus line, but I would recommend maybe this phone to someone who is not a smartphone crazy freak, but just, you know, is up for contract renewal and wanted to upgrade to reasonably priced handset.
Yeah.
That whole audience that just needs a phone.
Yeah.
You know, they just need a phone and, yes, some apps and things like that. I want to be able to check my email, you know, things like that. But, you know, that this works. You know, although I it's funny looking at it, like, it's been so long since I've seen a Galaxy S2 that I forgot that I was never really in love with that bezel with, like, the design of the device.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw it and I kind of cringed because it's like, oh, yeah.
I saw you flinch a little bit.
I don't really like it. Yeah.
I was like, oh, is he going to punch me?
There's something about that square button that looks kind of dated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Eileen really liked it, didn't she? She really liked that. Was that the phone she really liked?
She really liked the S3.
She really liked the S3.
But she did. I do remember being at Google I.O. and the S2 was out on display and she was freaking out about it. But, you know, then the S3 came along and swept her off her feet.
I know. Yeah, that's what happens.
And speaking of, you know, the next... You know, what we can kind of look forward to here, if you heard some of the news from CES, was Samsung kind of showing off their flexible display technology, which is really impressive. There is a link to umobile.org that I have here in the show notes. You can find all of these at twit.tv/AAA. If you scroll down, Chad, actually what you're looking at right now is the Galaxy Yume smartphones, where it kind of... It folds to the side a little bit, so you can see kind of on the edge there, there's that sideways slant that even when the case is closed, you see this little kind of ticker down there.
That is cool.
But if you scroll all the way down right before you get to that little chart thing, this is supposedly what we're looking at is the display from the S4. I don't know if there's confirmation. They seem to be pretty solid about that in this article, but... You know, it doesn't really say, like, so-and-so says this is. But that's kind of what the timeline and the supply chain and everything that they were kind of touting at CES this year says, a 4.99-inch HD display with this bendable display technology. So, and in Q1 of 2013, so it's kind of like all signs are pointing to, you know, this is getting more and more possible that this is going to be the S4.
That's pretty cool. Different. I know it's subtle. I mean, you look at the picture and you can just kind of tell some curvature on it or whatever, but like when you think about the application of that and the practical application of it and what you could do like with covers and things like that and what is exposed and what isn't, and then the fact that it's a bendable display.
To be clear, just for listeners, like when I heard bendable, I was like, oh, you're going to be able to shape this display into what you want. It's not adjustable, right? I mean, this phone is...
Oh, no, it's just curved.
It's curved, right?
It is, yes.
Sharply, and the display fits it.
Although, so it's, Although we're in striking distance of being able to roll this up and put it in our pocket.
Well, like, no.
Yeah, well, that's what's going to really be cool, right. You know, yeah. To like, I mean, be able to roll it up and throw it somewhere. Yeah.
They showed it off on stage. Yeah. They pulled out the display and flexed it back and forth and said, this is the display technology that we're working on. Obviously, that's not what...
Sure.
That's not what you can do with this phone, but right. That's what enables right. What they are doing with the phone. And if they're on the stage doing that with a full HD display, yeah, absolutely. Something like that has to be coming down the pipeline. That's different.
That's the kind of stuff that excites me. That's the jetpacks. That's the flying cars. That's the crazy future stuff that we were supposed to have now. Mm-hmm. So I like to see that.
Not to mention, yeah. If it's a flexible, flexible display like that, it's not glass.
Right.
So you drop it.
Yep.
You know, that's a whole world that hopefully you can kind of avoid the fear of dropping your really expensive smartphone, because I would venture to guess it's going to be a really expensive smartphone.
I said that. I forget what show it was on. I might have been last week or might have been before the holidays, but I actually do believe that this year and next year, I think a trend in devices, portable devices, is going to be around durability and around, you know, the droppable phones and phones that drop
waterproof
the,
and
yeah the bounce. Toilet test, you know, when you put your phone in your upper pocket and you bend over and then it falls on the toilet, like it
the
won't
Xperia,
you know, won't
Z
die.
Was
yeah exactly yeah, yeah. And I really mm-hmm. think that's because honestly, what more can we do? How much bigger can we make the screens? How much more HD can we pack on there?
Even you know, more HD.
Yeah, although after the DNA I'm totally subscribed to more HD, but I really think that, you know, being able to drop your phone from, you know, 7 feet in the air and not have it shatter, that's the next step.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Being a little bit of a futurist there. So, all right. So is that it on the Samsung?
I think so. Yeah. They've got some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah. So so moving on, when Android 4.2 came out, we did nothing but rave about all the great things that it fixed and all the neat little changes and things like that. But there's been a small population kind of grousing over something that broke. And actually, now Google has finally confirmed that the Bluetooth A2DP audio streaming problem is going to be fixed in the next release of Android 4.2. So those of you who are Bluetooth faithfuls who have suffered from the horrible indignation of audio lag and audio cutting out constantly and having frustrations with a solid Bluetooth stream, it looks like Google's on it, and version 4.2.2 should be addressing that problem, and you'll be able to do it. And I got to admit, I recently went on a road trip, and Bluetooth is the one thing I've never played with, I've never done, and I rented – and this is not an ad, but I did rent a Ford Flex – mm-hmm. And I turned the Bluetooth on and I synced my phone, and it was awesome. Mm-hmm. It was like it streamed. Clearly, I don't suffer from the problem, the Bluetooth streaming problem, but it streamed music from my phone, from an iPhone that was in the car. It totally was great.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. When it works great. Absolutely.
I'm a total convert in Bluetooth. Now I'm like, ooh, what can I do with Bluetooth?
It's a whole new world for Ron. So that's cool.
Speaking of being on it, there's a new – or developers being on it. There's a new – Google's rolling out the ability for developers to respond to reviews of their apps in the Play Store. They launched this a while back, and it was only for developers who had the top developer badge. But now it's rolling out to more developers. And that's happening slowly because my app, I do not have the ability to respond to reviews yet for my app. But I'm patiently waiting for that ability, Google people who are listening to this show. I've always said that I feel like it's not about how many bugs your app has, it's about how quickly you respond to them and how quickly even that you acknowledge them. So I feel like developers being able to respond to bad reviews or reviews with questions or reviews with inaccurate information or a misunderstanding of how things work, that's a great thing for everybody, right? Because these conversations happen in public on the page, and it really kind of becomes a little bit of a support forum.
Yeah.
I'm ready to get that ability.
That was my question about the public aspect of it. I mean, like I'm with you in terms of, you know, like you should address things in public and you should respond to them in public. But if you wanted to take it offline and go private, does Google give you that information or
because they have just switched the Google Play Store reviews to your full name attached to your Google profile.
Right, true.
I mean, you can just do it manually. You can go to the person's profile and send them a message or whatever. I'm not sure because it hasn't been enabled for me yet, but I don't think that you can respond privately. I think the responses are public.
Yeah.
I think that's a good thing. I think if you want to email the person, privately, you can just, you know, hunt down their contact information, because that's what it'll be there if the reviews are from here on, you know, newer reviews since they made that change that your full name shows.
And it also is great because how often do you find, I mean, like I very rarely post in forums or in get satisfaction or anything like that, but I'm constantly searching for, the way I look at it is that I can't be the only person having this issue, so someone else must have reported it, and if there's a public answer, then I'll gladly take that answer and not bother anybody and that sort of thing, you know, so.
Absolutely. It's much better. It's much better to have that stuff all on the page, right? Like I have, you know, for my app, it's an open source app. We have a mailing list. I don't want to make people join a mailing list and send an email to a form. You know, it's much better to just have it all in one place.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think this is a good thing. I think Google's steadily making the Google Play social aspects better.
Yeah, and I think you're completely right. It's especially in the world of Android where there are so many devices, expecting that an app works perfectly on every device all the time is kind of an unrealistic expectation. It's how, as you say, how the developer stays in contact with the users of their app and kind of caters to their needs as they arise.
And the challenges, and Gina, I'm sure you can relate to this, is just that replicating that problem and recreating the situation because there are so many different variables as to operating system, device, all those sort of things. So that's why I'm wondering, you know, how much back and forth can you do in public before you're like, okay, wait, tell me what your setup is, and you go in a little deeper. So I'll be curious to see how that develops.
Right. Yeah, so. Yeah, that's true. This is, whenever I look at an app in Google Play, I often look at the last updated date to see like how engaged developer is and whether or not it's been updated. And I feel like that's a good measure of activity on an app, but I feel like this will be a good measure as well. So if all developers can respond and there are lots of questions or bad reviews and no response, I feel like that's a really good measure of a developer engagement as well. Whereas if the developer's obviously there and answering questions and asking clarifying questions, then that would make me much more likely to buy an app.
Absolutely.
Because I'd be like, hey, somebody's home. Somebody's listening.
Yep. Totally. Somebody cares.
That engagement. Yeah. That engagement is so important whenever you're doing this stuff. And it's not even, you know, app development, just in business in general. Like, your customers are your business. And if you can't engage them and have a good relationship, then you're screwed.
So, sure. Yeah. Totally. I thought this was a fun email. This is fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little different from the, hey, I don't know how to do this, can you tell me how to do it type email. So I thought I'd throw it in. Good day, AAA crew. I'm a proud owner of a Galaxy Note 2 with T-Mobile and a professional graphic artist. I've been listening to your show for the better part of a year. Love it. Very insightful. I'm writing this in regards to my personal use of the Galaxy Note 2 as a sketch pad, and just wanted to share with you a few pieces of zombie-inspired art I created using Sketchpad Pro directly on my Note 2. So enjoy, keep up the great work. And attached a couple of pictures. Hopefully everybody here are zombie fans. They're not too graphic, but you know, they're zombie art. But I just thought, like, that's so cool that you could have that level of detail and do it on a Galaxy Note.
That's amazing. These were impressive.
Yeah,
it's a good.
This is some impressive art, and people who are listening to the audio version, this is why you have need video.
Yeah, exactly.
These are amazing.
Yeah, he did some really good zombie-inspired art with a Galaxy Note 2. And yeah,
it's really, like, considering that was done on a Galaxy Note.
Exactly,
like, that's
especially.
Impressive. I mean, it had to have been done with the pen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's not a finger thing. Yeah, but yeah, Amadeus, you're very talented.
Amadeus Tafoya is his name. I don't know. He didn't attach a site or anything, but search him. It's a pretty unique name. Search him online. Maybe
that's
he has
a great name, actually. Wow, that's a good name.
It is.
I really hope
is.
You do something with that name, Amadeus. That's great. Amadeus
Tafoya. Is art on the note.
Yeah, exactly.
Possibly more.
Honestly, that's a whole thing. I mean, if you really want to get your name out there in art and stuff like that, Amadeus, if you set up a blog and your whole thing is that all your art is on the Note, Galaxy Note, guaranteed you'll get some pickup on that from the blogs and things like that.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So. New Yorker cover, clearly.
Yep.
All right, I told you that we missed some things. Yes, it happens. We missed some things from CES. And,
it was very busy.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. There were a lot of things, and we were early in the week as well. So let's take a look at a few of those. We don't really have... Well, I guess we could roll the hardware drop. Why not? I forgot that this was all actually hardware, so it kind of works. We just don't have a CES drop.
Yeah.
There we go.
Huawei, a Chinese manufacturer, announced two of their premium smartphones. Really, let's just call them phablets because they're kind of huge.
Absolutely.
The Ascend Mate and the Ascend D2. So the Ascend Mate is the big one, although they're both pretty big. It's a 6.1-inch HD display, 4,050 mAh battery. So this is like the biggest battery that there's ever been, breaking records. Huawei claims that 48 hours of battery life from this monster battery.
Wow.
Quad-core, 4.1 Jelly Bean, 8-megapixel camera.
That thing is huge.
That's
Look
enormous.
At it.
Look at that.
It's huge. I got to tell you, I'm not much of a phablet person myself. That thing is, it's a little too big to be a phone, a little too small to be a tablet, as far as I'm concerned. But I think, you know, if you like your phones big and to last a really long time, it looks like a good option. The D2 is a little smaller, 5-inch HD display, 3,000 mAh battery, 1.5 gigahertz quad core, also 4.1 Jelly Bean, 13 megapixel camera though. So the Mate has an 8 megapixel camera. The D2 has a 13 megapixel camera. And now this is the coolest thing I thought about this demo. CNET wrote about this, and it'll be in our show notes. The D2 was waterproof, and on stage they had a tank full of water, and the guy demoing it had the phone and took a picture of water and just poured it over the phone. Apparently, like, the whole audience just gasped. So going back to what Ron said earlier about durability and inability to crack things and waterproofness, that they kind of did that during the demo. So I was like, oh, I would have loved to have seen that. So released in China and Europe first. No carrier partnerships in the U.S. yet, but it'll be sold unsubsidized online. Apparently, no price yet.
Yeah, that's so 6.1. That was kind of like
that's I feel like that's a tablet. I mean, where is the line? Is 7-inch a tablet?
That's what we're trying. I guess we're trying to figure out, right?
What happens if they put a phone? You can't take it out of that. Oh. Yeah, it's stuck to it. Remember we talked about that earlier. You can just hold it like that. There you go.
I mean, not much smaller than this.
Yeah, I mean it's 1 inch smaller. In fact, it's.
I mean, I can't knock this entirely, because I actually predicted in TNT. On Tech News Today that by the year's end, there would be a 7-inch tablet with phone built in that would be received reasonably well. Not saying that everybody is going to suddenly want a 7-inch tablet with phone functionality, but saying that there is definitely a group of people out there that love the 7-inch form factor so much that it doesn't make much sense for them to have a 7-inch tablet and then a phone in their pocket that does only the phone things. They want one device that does both.
The idea of putting a phone in this would be interesting, but I wouldn't consider this my phone. Like, I wouldn't want to do that. Yeah. Like what I would want, like, if they position the product so it came with a Bluetooth device or came with some sort of device and it just happened to have a phone paired with it, then that's something interesting. No one's done that as of yet. It's all been kind of like, it's a phone that you can also use as a pad.
The pad phone.
The pad phone, yeah.
I mean, the point at which our phone lines all sort of converge. Like, I use Google Voice, right? So it's this one number, and I just install it on all of my devices, so I can switch devices really easily in the same phone number. I mean, the point at which your tablet or all your devices just become these, like, you know, video or voice, you know, messaging, connecting, you know, devices, where it's not like, oh, that's my phone for this line, that's this line. I think it'll be a lot more practical to just be like, oh, I'm just going to plug my headset into my Nexus 7 because I'm sitting at my desk and I can take a call on it. But I think we're a long way from that. I think most people don't use something like Google Voice or, you know, have different lines. And I would never buy a tablet with a separate, like, minute, you know, plan for minutes on it, because just for that reason, you look crazy holding it up to your head.
However, go back in time 2 years ago when most of the Android devices, particularly, and, you know, the iPhone was pretty small as well. You know,
still is.
Yeah. 3.7
People hold iPhones, 3.5
inch devices. Then we were probably saying very similar things about 5 inches and more. Now five inches suddenly is very accepted.
I have to say, after spending a year with the iPhone, and now I've been on the Galaxy Nexus full time, I picked up the iPhone the other day. It looked like a toy. It just looked so small to me. I've just gotten used to the bigger screen. The Galaxy Nexus isn't huge, but it's get used to it.
People try to do stuff on the iPhone, they hand it to me, and I'm just like, it's like Tinker Toys.
It's tiny.
It's tiny. Yeah. I feel like it's the iPhone. Plastic iPhone that comes with my niece's doll, like Barbie. That, you know, it's like, oh, she's got a phone. You know, like, it's like, this is a real phone. Four inches higher.
In addition to being smaller, it does have this weird toy feel to it. Yeah. Like, so anyway, I don't mean to. I'm not iPhone bashing. Just saying.
And you know what? 2 years from now, when we're so used to having 7-inch tablets, we're gonna be like, hey, bring it on, 10-inch tablet with a phone. I want that. No, I don't actually. Well, I mean, actually, who knows?
I mean, to that point, though. I mean, to Gina's point with Google Voice. I mean, like, if I could have a phone, an integrated cell phone in my laptop, I think I would want that too. I mean, I kind of have it with Skype. I use Skype so much.
Yeah, it depends on how you define phone.
I feel like, is it time that we give up the ghost on the concept of the phone and it's just a computing device that allows you to connect to people, and voice is one way that you can connect.
Absolutely.
I hate to say it, but that's actually what's happening with Google Voice. When you connect your Google Voice number, it will actually ring my laptop first before it rings the cell phone. So I can pick it up if I have Gmail open in the browser.
Right.
Why would you hate to say that?
I'm just because it sounds like you were like, well, I want this to happen. Well, it's already happening.
You should be loud and proud.
Right.
So not to get off topic, we kind of deviated off the thing. But so has Google Voice fixed the MMS problem?
No.
No.
See,
no.
That's the only thing keeping me from going full Google Voice. I want it.
It is deeply, deeply frustrating. Yeah. Yeah. On some carriers, if someone MMSs you, you'll get an email with an attachment.
Okay.
Right. So that's on some carriers, I think it's just Sprint, and maybe they're trying to roll it out to others.
Yeah,
but
I think
it's not
it is Sprint.
The same as receiving an image or a video in line in your text message. You know, it's just not the same.
Yeah.
So the MMS thing is the only problem.
And the really frustrating thing about that too is I would expect that Google in their infrastructure around Google Voice would at least know when someone's trying to send an MMS,
well, right?
Right. And then they could
they
at least notify you. Or
yeah,
notify
like,
them.
Yeah, like, hey, this didn't go through. Yeah.
You don't even get that.
That's the only thing. It's really frustrating. I never really used MMS. I didn't think it would be a big deal, but then I had a kid, and every time I had to default to like the actual native number on the phone, I feel like it's a personal failure. Like I want to use the one Google Voice number because as soon as I, you know, call my mom on the other phone, she's like, "What line is this?" and like gets all confused, and then I'm not on the right phone. Yeah. You know? So I always want to stick to the Google Voice number, but the lack of MMS is a pain. It's a pain. So don't switch until they fix it. They've got to fix it.
I think. I'm so tempted. I want to embrace it so much, but there's always that one thing. Anyway, I'm sorry. That's
Anyway, yeah.
Not on CES topic.
I'm sorry. I completely agree though, and it's definitely a topic. A lot of people, you know, want to get into voice, but they can't.
I would say it's
because
one of
voice is great. I mean, voice is awesome for every other reason.
I would say it's one of our top five like hot button issues. Yeah. I mean, after you did that whole analysis of switching or not switching and all stuff like that, how I really want it right now. I have it, and it really is only so that the front door in my apartment can buzz me because they can't buzz a non-local number. You know, and so I'm not embracing it at all, and I really want to. But
Well, let's continue on the CES train. Arcos, which I actually missed this. Aaron Newcomb was here for This Week in Google last week, so that probably means that you talked about it on This Week in Google a little bit. But I was very interested in what he showed me about the Arcos, a few things from Arcos. First, the Arcos TV Connect, which is $129, launching February in Europe and U.S., running 4.1.1 Jelly Bean. So it's one of the not Google TV, but instead it's Jelly Bean.
A TV device that's not Google TV.
Yeah, it has an HD camera mounted on the top of your TV with a TV Touch remote for control. The remote interacts with the camera control a cursor on the screen. It kind of does. Yeah. I don't know the full capabilities of this, but I mean, literally, when you watch the demo, it's a TV screen that has a Jelly Bean desktop on it.
Why would you want that?
Yeah, that's the advantage to that, right? Is that you can get every app, right? We were talking about this on Twitter. I mean, it's really kind of insulting to Google TV that they'd be like, oh, that operating system you made for TVs? No thanks. Like, we'll take the other one that was built for phones.
Right.
And how it might be kind of a little weird. So the remote has this touchpad because you have to be able to simulate kind of swiping across your TV screen, right? So you got this kind of touchpad that you move your finger across to simulate sort of, you know, tapping and swiping. So it's a little, I imagine that the experience is a little bit weird.
Yeah.
But kind of nice that you can get all the, like, you have the full Google Play Store, right? Because there are so few apps for Google TV.
But so if you've got all that money to develop that nifty controller, why don't you take a little time and do a UI? Just do a front end, do a launcher that's more that's TV optimized.
Yeah.
You know?
They may have. Yeah. Did they say in this?
I didn't see any example of a UI.
Everything I've seen just looks like it's a flat, you know, Android desktop.
As I could tell, this is just kind of what it was.
But it's crazy. I like it.
Yeah, it's different. Yeah. It's definitely different. I do wonder how practical it would be.
Yeah.
But hey, you can get Android on so many different places. Now you can get the thing that you expect to see on your devices. Yeah. You can get it on your big screen TV.
Hey, I'm the biggest Google TV fan there is. But just because Google TV made Google TV doesn't mean that's the only thing that's got to be on a TV running Android.
Totally.
If somebody else can innovate and come up with a different way of applying Android on the TV, bring it on. Do it. Yeah,
so. Absolutely. Yep. Now I want someone to hack a Kinect so you can, you know, use gestures to navigate and not just rub your finger on the
right.
the remote.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Another thing that I thought was kind of interesting, especially in light of the project. Man, now I'm blanking, but the NVIDIA project.
Oh, Shield.
Shield. There yes. we go. I wanted to say Infinity, but that was obviously
wrong. I was
going to
say Glass. But
right. Along those lines, the kind of dedicated gaming style device running Android, Arkos has their gamepad, which this thing, I mean, it's maybe a little bit. Well, a little bit ugly, right?
it looks like something like? Out of Radio Shack.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, I guess Arkos isn't necessarily, you know, always known to be like a premium hardware company anyway. So it kind of has a little bit of a cheaper kind of build quality to it. But if you skip, Chad, to what it was, it was 138 in the video. They show off kind of mapping. So basically what this allows you to do, and you can do this through the use of other apps on Android as well, is you can map games that don't have controller capabilities. You can map portions of the screen for touch. So you can see right now he's basically taking a portion of the screen, creating a controller over the top of it, and he's mapping all of these buttons and controls to the screen to match what the app expects. And then when you continue to play the game, you can just use the actual hardware controllers as opposed to using the touchscreen controllers.
That's pretty cool.
That's really cool.
I want the A button to be here, and I want the B button to be here. Yeah, yeah, really mm-hmm. nice.
So, or vice versa, or it's a game that has screen controls and I want to use the joystick.
Right.
Right, yeah, and I want to use mm-hmm. the buttons on the side of it. Yeah, mm-hmm. that's really cool. So,
yeah. Nice. So that's pretty nifty. $149 running 4.1 Jelly Bean. It's a 7-inch tablet with all those physical controls for gaming. So there were a few more of these at CES, so kind of seeing a little bit more of this. I don't know how successful of a thing it's going to be. Yeah. The Xperia Play didn't do so hot last year, so who knows? It might fizzle out.
Well,
it's nice to see Jelly Bean on all these that we talked about today. Absolutely. Versus ice cream sandwich. You know, yeah. I mean, it's Jelly Bean 4.1, so it's not the latest, greatest, but it's nice to see. When I hear ice cream sandwich or honeycomb, I'm like, oh, well, no one ships with honeycomb anymore. But ice cream sandwich, it's like, oh, it feels behind.
Yeah. Man, I was watching something on a show earlier today on Twitter. In fact, I don't know if it was Before You Buy. No, it was on the GizWiz. And Dick DiBartolo was showing off some, I think it was a refrigerator that had Android built into it. And wouldn't you know it, it had a honeycomb on it.
Oh, it had a honeycomb.
Yeah.
the honeycomb user forms were totally
right off the top. And it was expensive.
I want ice cream sandwich in my freezer. Thank you very much. preferably many there. Boxes of them.
Yep.
I couldn't resist.
Clever. Well, building off that momentum, Arkos not only showed up with some interesting TV and gaming devices, but they kind of led the pack in a little section that we like to call cheap tablets. One of the things about tablets is that with the release of the iPad and the Nexus line and the Kindle and Nook and stuff like that, is that tablets now are getting cheaper and easier to produce, and we're going to start seeing the market get even more flooded with them. And this is a clear sign of that. Arkos showed up with not just one, but several tablets. Just to go through the line real quickly, the Arkos 70 Titanium tablet is a 7-inch tablet for $119. The Arkos 80 Titanium is a 8-inch tablet at $169, that is. The Arkos 101 Titanium is not 101 inches, but 10.1 inches, and that is $199. And the Arkos 97 Titanium HD sells for $249, and that's a 9.7-inch tablet, but it's got a 2048x1536 resolution, which is comparable to the Retina display, but it's less than the Nexus 10. But all of these have HD, dual-core CPU with 1.6 gigahertz of quad-core GPU, the aluminum Arkos design that we saw there earlier, running Android 4.1 Jelly Bean. So that's a pretty solid lineup from Arkos as far as tablets.
I mean, they kind of cover all the bases there. You know, Arkos 70 up against your Kindle Fires and your Nexus 7, the 80 against the iPad Mini, the 101 against, you know, your Samsung Galaxy Tabs and stuff, and then the 97 against the full-size iPad.
I got to admit, if you're reading, about these tablets and you're curious and stuff like that, and you're rolling a Best Buy and you see a $119 7-inch tablet, like, You know, and admittedly, you know, but those aren't bad specs either. It's a decent device, you know, so.
Yeah. I'd be curious to play around with one and see.
Yeah, really interesting.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see what the UI is like. Did they put some crazy skin on it? But yeah, these are pretty good specs.
And so then after CES, Asus, who is the maker of the Nexus 7, which we adore, quietly launched a new Mimo Pad for $149. And that's got a 1024 by 600 LED display at 170 PPI, which isn't really anything they should be promoting.
Yeah.
1 gigahertz CPU, 1 gigabyte of RAM. It's got 8 gig internal storage with micro SD slot, a 1 megapixel camera capable of HD at 30 frames per second.
I thought that was funny. One megapixel camera, but it records HD, just really, really bad HD. Really blurry HD. Is that just saying we take all of those pixels and record them, like blow them up? Or I don't even know what that means. 1 megapixel at HD. That's weird.
Anyways. It'll be a new style of artsy music video will be shot with these.
Right.
I just love how the CES time is the time where so many specs get thrown out. We just hear numbers and letters and all those things. And it's all, you know, But finally... So I would expect to get a tablet from Asus. I'm surprised to hear that we've got a tablet from Arcos, but I'm even more surprised to be talking to you about a tablet from Polaroid. You might know from their disposable cameras. But they actually rolled out some tablets that might actually be some pretty good competition. The Polaroid M7 is coming out this spring at $129, and that's a 7-inch tablet. And the Polaroid M10 is $229, also coming out this spring. They're both running Android 4.1 Jelly Bean. They've got 1280 by 800 IPS displays, 2-megapixel front-facing camera, micro SD slot, and the Polaroid M7 has got dual core and 8 gig of storage. And while the Polaroid M10 has got a quad core with 16 gig of storage, HDMI, and 5-megapixel rear-facing camera. Those are some devices. Like Polaroid, look out with a little. And also, did you see in the picture the little Microsoft?
Very tiled.
Yeah, look at that.
But is the Google Play Store on this thing? One of the commenters says no.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Where do you get your apps? Is there a Polaroid store?
That's because that's what we need is a Polaroid store.
We need a Polaroid app store.
Yeah, I know, clearly.
And it's nothing but photo apps.
Let the app stores bloom.
No, I think I had heard that there is no Play Store, at least at launch.
What's interesting on here is if you look in these photos, just default, you know, they've got a web browser, they've got Gallery, they've got Facebook, and they've got Nook on the device. I wonder if they're leaning on Barnes & Noble. There's some sort of Barnes & Noble partnership there.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
But you're seeing a lot of these lower-end tablets kind of coming in around $129 and not being what we've expected in the, you know, or seen at least, you know, 2 years ago when tablets started hitting Android and, you know, that price was getting you a ridiculous experience and horrible specs.
I'm fully expecting to walk into Best Buy and see the Dynex tablet next, or like I'm surprised Dynex doesn't even have one of those lower end, you know, or the Insignia brand. Isn't that Best Buy's like internal like TV brand? Like they're gonna start rolling out these tablets left and right. If Polaroid's making them, anybody can make them. So
sure,
interesting.
Polaroid's needed to kind of reinvent themselves a little bit here because their whole film thing kind of
I thought they were dead
has gone away. Exactly. All right, well, let's take this wasn't really an email. This actually came from the All About Android community page on Google+. If you didn't know, we started one shortly before the new year, so go to Google Plus and search for All About Android. I think in a previous show, we were kind of discussing, like, why would we do a community page? What is the whole deal? And it's actually really cool because it allows you guys to talk to each other as well as to us and create your own conversations between each other. So it's like fans of the show all talk about Android with each other. It's awesome.
Is it a community?
It's a community of people talking all about Android. Weird.
I was on it quite a few times this week. In fact, could help me like pick my app for the week, and I got some good feedback. Yeah, it's a good.
People are.
I've been liking it.
Yeah,
I turned on notifications. That's how much I liked it.
Wow, that means I really like it. Statement. Wow.
Yeah. something. I am very, very judicious with my notifications. So.
I understand. Now, Marlon Thompson, who is a big fan of the show, he writes in a lot and definitely see him a lot, very active on the community page, wrote a quick update to say we had talked on a previous show about catching Twit Live on your device, and I know that we had talked about it in a video form. There are a ton of Twit apps in the store, in the Play Store, that aren't necessarily official Twit apps, but they do, you know, varying degrees of things, allowing you to kind of catch our live feed. Marlon pointed out there is a way to listen to the stereo version of Twit Live if you search for TuneIn Radio, which is a pretty popular app for just pulling in radio stations. If you just search for it through TuneIn Radio, however, there's over a 1 minute delay with the live feed. And he says, who wants to live in the past? Now you can add custom feeds to a new revision of this app and save them. So how you do it is you go to enter in a custom URL and you type in twit.am/listen.m3u. It's basically an M3 streaming playlist, I believe. And then it starts to play the stream for you with little to no lag, and it's a stereo feed of the stream as well, if that matters. All we do is talk on here. What's in stereo?
What Marlon doesn't know is that that's the 1 minute delay because I'm prone to curse a lot.
Yeah,
actually, that whole delay is here, right. And Chad's got a kill button, and so yeah, no.
Got to bleep, Ron.
Right, it's quite a problem. Actually, it's really stunted my career. No,
Ron is going to let you finish, but. Nice. So, Marlon, thank you for posting that on the community page. And I did actually install it and played around with it earlier. And the cool thing about that is that you can save it as a link so that all you have to do is load up the app and go right to it. And you have your live Twit coming at you in full force. It's not video. It's just audio, but it's stereo. So hopefully that helps some people. And it's all going to be in our show notes. Don't worry, Wade County. It will be there, twit.tv/AAA, when this show posts to the site a little bit later on today. Now, without further ado, let's dive into apps. All right.
Brand new backup app called Carbon, which apparently is an inside joke about another Android app that was supposed to be called Carbon that never really shipped. I'm not really sure what the whole story is there, but this Carbon app is a free app backs up all of your Google or all of your Android applications and user data. So the problem this app is trying to solve is that, you know, you can back up your Android apps to your Google account, and if you get a new device or if you wipe your device and you reset it up, you know, it redownloads your apps, but it often doesn't redownload your data, and you're not signed in, you have to re-sign in, you have to get everything set up again. This app, Carbon, backs up everything, all your user data, all your apps. You can back up to your Google Drive, you can back up to Dropbox, you can do an encrypted zip on your PC. The catch is you need root, and this is actually a beta, so the Carbon is not in the Play Store. You actually have to grab the APK from its developer's Google Plus page. You won't need root when it actually does ship, which we'll mention on the show when it does. But this is, I didn't actually try this out because I don't have root on my phone. I'm trying to be really disciplined about having like the normal person experience on my phone. But Kevin Purdy, who's a longtime friend and my co-host on my show, he reviewed Carbon for IT World, and he said this is how Android app backup should be done.
Yeah, I have it installed, actually.
Yeah, that Carbon nailed it. What did you think, Jason? Did you like it?
Yeah, I installed it and kind of went through the steps a little bit, and then I got distracted with the show, so I wasn't able to actually complete the backup. But you can see it's a very clean kind of interface. It has all my apps here. If I wanted to back up, I don't know, Volume Plus, it gives me the option to do that. As I add more and more apps, the icons kind of line up there. I can back up, select my destination, go to Google Drive, and it'll do the backup.
Cool.
I got confused because at some point it goes to another screen. This is the screen, and it was just too much text, and I had to start another show, and I was like, okay, I can't finish this right now.
TLDR.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll do this some other time. But basically, this says a full backup of all data to a connected desktop computer has been requested. That's what kind of confused me. I thought I was backing it up to Drive and not to my desktop. I didn't know if they were one and the same or what it meant by that. Right. So anyways, you can, you know, create a password so you can encrypt it on the way to your desktop. Oh, it just disappeared. And do that. I just don't have it plugged in, so I can't really go any further than this to my laptop. But definitely a really kind of clean approach to this. And then if I go back here, it's probably going to fail on what I had. But up there, if I could get to it, is restore and sync. And that allows you to do just that, you know, pull back from that source and restore your app. So always a good idea to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like if you're the kind of person who wipes your phone a lot or tries a lot of different ROMs or is messing with your phone, you know, in perhaps unofficial ways, that this is you should have this app. You should back up this way because it lets you restore things really quickly and easily. I heard that there's some bugginess in it. And like I said, it is a beta and it's not in the Play Store yet.
Right.
It won't require root once it does launch. I will definitely get it then. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it looks like you can go to your computer, your drive, or Dropbox. My app, I actually haven't done any development kind of in this area. I'm concerned a little bit that one app can grab all of the app data for other apps on the phone. That sounds strange to me. From what I understand, application data is sandboxed, but this developer is good and has released a bunch of other apps, and he says that he won't need root when it does ship. So he's found a way around that.
I thought that was kind of strange too. That's definitely, this is a feature that if you've heard of Titanium Backup, which is an app that, I mean, I use.
Which requires root though.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It requires root. So when I saw his update that said that it wouldn't eventually, really curious to know, or maybe that's, you know, backup parts of those apps, but not the actual APK. Because I think that's a big part here of what they're trying to prevent is backing up an APK, because that's an easy way to kind of pirate apps as well.
There's app piracy, but this is also just personal data. I mean, there's just like, you know, personal data that app store, you know, that generally, from what I understand, is sandboxed. For, you know, one app can't just say like, oh, is this other app installed? Can I just look at its data?
Yeah. Hey, let's all gather around and share what we know about this person. Hey, what
right,
you got?
Exactly. For obvious reasons. Exactly. Right.
It's a community.
We all really want to know you much better.
So I'm curious about, but we'll wait and see.
To add more color to the issue you were talking about earlier about the carbon that the story had heard of, that was a much ballied about Twitter app that was supposed to come out last year that just was vaporware. So
it just kind of died.
Yep.
Yeah. So apparently this is going to get renamed as well. Like the developer said in his demo video, this app name is an inside joke. I'll probably change it. For now, I'm just calling it Carbon. So we'll mention it on the show when it does show up in the Play Store, all official like.
Excellent. Cool. Something else that was announced in the past week, Chrome beta. So if you've been on the desktop, I know I've done this. I've opted to install the beta version of Chrome, and you kind of, you know, you get kind of some of the stuff that they're working on before it's rolled out in an official way. Sometimes it can be new features. It can be stability. It can also introduce instability. So you got to be careful. But they are allowing you to do that on the Android side as well. So there will be a link in the show notes on how to get there. It's not easy to find if you go to Play Store and search for it. From what we understand, it's not easy to do that. But the direct link will be in the show notes, and you can go right there and install it. And I haven't installed, I haven't used it a whole lot because I haven't replaced Chrome with it. I'm a little wary to do that. But Chad, I know you said that you had done that. Gina, I think you've done that as well, right?
Yeah, I have. Just so people know, if you search for Chrome beta in the Play Store, it's not one of the results. But if you Google Chrome beta for Android, you'll get the Play Store link. I switched it to my default browser. You know, I'm subscribed to the beta channel on the desktop, and I never noticed any problems. I kind of just like to test out the new stuff. So I switched it to my default browser on my phone, and I really haven't had many problems. The one website I had a problem with is one that I developed, so that was, you know, informative to me. But for the most part, I haven't had an issue. I mean, you know, the nice thing about Android is that if there's a web app that you use all the time and it doesn't work on, you can just switch. You know, you just switch back to the stable Chrome. You know,
absolutely.
I gotta admit, I've a friend of mine's on the Chrome team at Google, and they just do. If you ask me, they're one of my favorite teams at Google because they're pushing. They want to make that browser experience as optimal as it can be across multiple devices. And like we saw it at I/O last year. You know, I'm looking forward
they
to
ship like fiends.
Yeah, they ship like fiends. Mm-hmm. Like crazy.
There's already been an update for it. And just so you know, you can see, like, the icon has a little, like, sash across it that says beta. So you can very clearly see when you're using the beta versus when you're using the stable one.
Yes.
But, yeah, the Chrome team is, I mean, they're rocking, too.
Yeah, they're great. They're good guys. So, and girls. Yay, Google. All right. An app that is now available in the Google Play Store is an app that I got all excited about. Simple Bank is out for Android. And if you hadn't heard about this, this is a startup that is trying to take the kind of startup disruptive approach to banking and just do simple banking. And the idea is that it's a bank that it's a 100% virtual bank you can open up a checking account with. And they give you great ways to get insight and visualization to the data around how you spend your money, tracking what bills you pay, tracking how you spend your money, and then giving you a good exposure as to, you know, this is how much you have, but this is how much you can spend because you got these bills coming up and this sort of thing. And it's a neat different way to kind of approach your finances in a more integrated way. It's been available out on iOS for a while, and I've been waiting for it. And then finally came out. It literally came out today, and I installed it. I set up my account. I haven't transferred any money into that account yet, so I've got no money into it, so I can't actually show you how it does it. I can just show you what Chad just showed on the screen. But it's a beautiful app. Beautiful, great job.
I think you need to pull up your accounts right now and show it off. Yeah.
So Simple is amazing. Like, from a UI perspective, the web app, the mobile apps, it's astonishing. It's just so beautiful and so well done. I have a Simple account, and I added like $200 to it a while back. And I didn't take the time to transfer all my direct deposits and all my everything over, honestly, because I'm just lazy and I was just sort of curious. But and I use Mint, and I feel like that's good enough. But I have to say, Simple has incredible user experience set up, and they've been clearly adding features. I actually saw a deposit button there on the on the app, which they didn't have when they first launched it. I've had my account for a while, but yeah, I mean, if you're looking for sort of the new I shouldn't say the new ING, but kind of the new sort of progressive, forward-facing, tech-focused banking solution, Simple looks like it's it.
Yeah, and I'm in the same position as you. I mean, I'm a Bank of America customer because I was a Fleet customer because I was a NatWest customer going back to 1985, right? So, like, so much of my life is entwined into that account. So, like, to uproot and move my checking account totally over. But if I was starting over, starting fresh, if I had a new identity and I was in a new town and I didn't have anything, you know, I didn't have recurring bills and things like that, I might consider it. I was talking about it with a friend of mine, and he's doing the same kind of, you know, personal beta test. And I'll play with it. I'll put some money in there. I'll see how it goes. I'll pay some bills that way. You can mail people checks. You can virtually write a check, and it'll send you the check. And, you know, so, I mean, it's just a different way to approach banking. And I like the disruptive nature of it. So, and the app is beautiful. So. Cool.
A little update to one of my favorite apps on Android, on Jelly Bean, Google Now. Google Now gets boarding passes. So I'm really excited to try this out because I'm on the road at the moment and I'm going to be at the airport in a couple of days. And I'm hoping to see that what should happen, in theory, if this all works, Google Now will sense that I'm at the airport, see in my Gmail that I have a confirmation number for my flight, and it'll just pop up a new card that says, like, hey, here's your QR code. Scan this at the gate, right? So in theory, I wouldn't have to print out a boarding pass. Love Google Now. Love
That's
this
awesome.
This kind of, like, know where you are, know what you're doing. And in fact, a few weeks ago, we mentioned this on This Week in Google. Like, right now, I have flight confirmation emails in my Gmail inbox.
Right.
And so if I search for my flights in Google, it will say, like, here's your flight, and it's on time. And these days, like, in a one-box result, this Google Now card is similar to that. Like, but it knows when you're at the airport, so it brings up the boarding pass.
They haven't
listed which airlines they support yet,
right.
Which is really weird. Like, they said it's for limited airlines, but they just won't say who. So it's going to be kind of crapshoot. And of course, and somebody did bring up in one of the stories covering this, I think on Fandroid, that, you know, sometimes scanning your smartphone, like the code, the QR code on your smartphone can get weird, you know, if there's reflection or weirdness. So it might not be I'm just really excited that Google Now is going to know that I'm at JFK and, like, where I'm going and whether or not I'm on time.
Yeah, we'll see. That's super cool. I mean, the question is that what airlines will it work with? And also, from what I found, I mean, like, flying in and out of New York and San Francisco, totally fine with the scan your phone for your boarding pass. But, like, I flew into Lexington or somewhere in the South or whatever, and they just looked at me like I was crazy, and I had to go print out a boarding pass. And it was so your mileage may vary not only on the airlines but also the airports. But
but isn't there isn't isn't it just sometimes some card readers, some readers just don't pick it up as well?
Yep.
I went to the movies and they kind of emailed your seat, this kind of fancy theater in San Diego, and it took them like six times to scan the ticket on my phone. I was just like, oh, this is, I don't know if this is worth it.
Well, that's like,
so I don't know, maybe I just needed to brighten the screen or what.
I ran into this similar thing, not with scanning the barcode, but just in general, like, is this worth it? Because Walgreens, at least in San Francisco, now supports Google Wallet. And I was like, oh, right. Great. Remember, I was ranting. I'm like, I'm at the gym. I don't have any money on me. I just want to go get some water. You know, and but the thing is that because of the way that the point of sale system works at Walgreens is that you scan your Google Wallet, and then as opposed to just paying for it, you got to ask credit or debit. Is this okay? Do you want any cash back? And you go through all these questions, and then there's a timeout window for Google Wallet. By the time you get through all those questions, Google Wallet has canceled the transaction.
Right.
So the first time I did it, I did like three times, and there's a line queuing up behind me, and everyone's getting angry. I'm like, fine, I'll just pay you, and I just give them cash.
Yeah.
And I walked out.
You're like, no, wait, hold on. This is going to be really cool when it works.
This is the future I want to live in. It's just going to take me 100 years to get there.
Yeah. You know, it's the same with like voice input. You know, voice input, if you're never going to use it, if there's that doubt that every time you use it, it's going to, you know, will it work or will it not work? Yep. Or it takes twice as long because you have to say the same thing five times in order for it to work. Like, then suddenly it becomes way less useful to you. And it's the same with the mobile payments. They all need to get to a certain point to where you can depend on them.
I'm telling you, this is my theory. I feel like the theme for this episode is future and futurism, but this is my theory about technology and futurism. You're all going to laugh at me, but we are on the precipice of we're at the end of an old age and the beginning of a new age. And the what I'm holding up, and I think I've talked about this before, what I'm holding up as my goal of the future is Star Trek. And right now, if we were in Star Trek world, the doors to the holodeck would break, and we'd have five different companies that make holodeck doors, and one company has a special connector for it, and the other one doesn't work with this one, and all stuff like that. We have to get to that utopian kind of point where it's just one kind of interface, one kind of device, and everything just kind of works together with everything, and data talks to each other, and everything kind of flows. And I mean, capitalism is very much against that because, you know, you've got Google and you've got Apple and all that stuff like that. But that's the goal we're working for, is that when everything just works seamlessly and together,
right?
Yeah, you know, so mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's standard holodeck doors.
Exactly.
I think that's a worthy goal.
Yep.
Worthy goal.
First, we need holodecks.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
We got the doors.
Then the doors.
We got the doors. We're almost there.
Look, you
got
to start somewhere. All right, folks? It's the future.
All right. Well, we can start with this email, which is actually a video mail.
Yep.
And Jacob wrote in and says, I hope you can help me with my migration from iOS to Android. Here is my video question.
Hi, All About Android crew. Jacob Loeb here with a simple question that may not have a simple answer. I use both Android and iOS devices, and I want to switch my phone from an iPhone to an Android phone, but it's missing a feature that I rely on, which is the ability to get a definition of a word as I'm typing. On iOS, I have this nice define button, which will present me with the dictionary definition of the word that I've selected. I can't find the same functionality on my Android devices, and I'm hoping you can help. Love the show.
I'm hoping we can, too. Yeah,
well, first off, that is a very specific requirement for your phone usage.
I saw it, I was like, yeah, why can't you do that?
Well, if you're reading a book on the Kindle app, you can, but that's just because it's within the app.
Yeah, I guess that's the difference, right, is that in certain apps, they've built in that functionality. What I was wondering through this, and I did some digging around to try and find, and there was one dictionary that I found called Fora Dictionary. I have to imagine that there's more. I tried this with Fora, and I couldn't get it to work, but it touts clipboard monitoring. So if you were typing something, you could copy the word that you wanted definition for, and it would pop up a notification. You could pull it down, and you could get to the definition there. I have to imagine – I couldn't get it to work for me, but it's – you know, there were a lot of comments in the app itself that said that, you know, it's a great app and that it works and everything. So maybe I just couldn't figure it out. So I'm kind of putting this out as a call to people because this would actually be a really cool feature. Why isn't there an app that does this?
It's because of share. So I agree. Define is awesome on iOS, but you can you know, copy or you can select any text and share it to any dictionary app. Do you know what I mean? And I think this is like kind of one of the fundamental things about like when you switch from iOS to Android, like not understanding. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like the share menu, Like, so define is one thing that's built in iOS everywhere, but share is the other, is the thing that's, you know, intents, right, is what the developer's side of it. Like, that's everywhere. So really, any, your favorite dictionary app on Android. Now, I don't have a favorite dictionary app. I didn't get a chance to try Fora. But in theory, any dictionary app should just take a string that's, you know, you copy to your clipboard, right, mm-hmm. and then define it. Right? Am I totally off?
That's what I'm wondering here. I put the link in there, Chad, just a few seconds ago. I put a post on Google Plus a couple hours ago with this question, and you'll notice just the avalanche of replies that I got. Absolutely none.
Wow.
So I don't know. I don't know. Maybe people just haven't seen it yet, but it could just be that there is no simple solution for this. But yeah, you're right. I would imagine that a dictionary app on Android would at least kind of be able to do the clipboard management of something like this.
Right.
You know, take whatever's in the clipboard, pop up a notification and tell you what is defined by that if you have it active. But I couldn't find it. But yeah, you're right. The share kind of lends itself against that. I've never had an iOS device, so I'm not used to this functionality. I had never really considered it, to be honest. But
yeah, so you cut right and share, and then you should be able to send it to anything that accepts text, right?
Right.
So you should be able to have any dictionary app,
and then it would just pull
it,
up.
Define it.
Then I guess it's a couple of clicks to get there.
But I see what you're saying. Like having something monitoring the clipboard constantly. I generally try to stay away from those just because they're kind of always running.
Yeah.
But that would be fewer taps.
Yeah.
If you define as much as this viewer does, which
yeah, I don't
like
know.
He does a lot.
That's a lot. I mean, again, I mean, I go back to it's a very specific use case. It's a very I mean, maybe he has a better vocabulary than I am, which I'm willing to tip my hat to you, sir. But
or worse.
Yeah, or worse. If that, you know, then good on you for trying to better yourself.
No, I'm a big, I define, whenever I see a word, I went to Catholic school, so this got drummed, the nuns drummed this into my head. Like, whenever I see a word that I don't know, I generally try to look it up, but I get lazy about it on my phone because it's not as simple. And it's true, it is kind of simpler on iOS. But I use the define keyword on Google a lot, and I use WordNik a lot, which I like.
Maybe what needs to happen, maybe this is another key feature for replacement keyboards. Build it into your keyboard app.
Ooh, and where's Joe at SwiftKey? We should.
I'm just throwing ideas out there. Just lobbing that one out there and seeing who picks it up. But if you've got an alternate keyboard app, that definitely could be another way to differentiate you from the other ones out there. Add a built-in definition capability in there.
Fascinating.
I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Let's dive into the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android. Arena.
Subtle change, right? Subtle change. It's been two enter for forever, and it never worked because there were always three of us.
Yep.
Now it's evergreen.
Yep.
Now it doesn't matter.
That's great.
It only doesn't work if there's one of us.
Correct. Yeah. Yes. Right. You need at least more.
Which
than one.
Which won't happen because then greater it would just it'd one. Just be a show of with me, right? Because.
Well, we're all sick. Chad, you're just going to have
Chad, I hope that you can handle the show.
Exactly. Big thanks to Bill Meeks, who created the original drop. And then I put a call out to him, and I was like, hey, please help me out. Could you just redo this? It's let's start the new year fresh. And he did it. And he did it on, you know, just like turned on a dime and belted that out. So that's thank awesome. You, Bill Meeks. You're awesome.
That was great. You got me. You had me all ready for a new Android Arena bumper. I'm like, but I like our bumper.
I was like, you know what? I know. Exactly. Totally. That's the thing. Like, I don't want to get rid of that. I think that's a great drop. So last week we had an arena, as we always do, episode 91.
It sure
Sorry,
was an
I was,
arena.
I was waiting for it,
it
to load
Gina's
here.
First arena.
Gina's
my first one.
And yeah. you
yes.
kicked some butt. You win.
Yes.
Good job. Congratulations.
Yes.
Trello
Thank you.
Wins with 46% of the votes. Press came in second at 36%. And Dr. Panda's Veggie Garden.
Listen, you and your friends in Canada can play Dr. Panda's Veggie Garden.
Oh, yeah,
until the
look
cows
at Canada.
Come home. Canada is very behind the Dr. Uh-huh. Panda.
Oh, yeah, I know.
For it. Yeah, so.
Yeah. I know all those folks in Canada. They love veggies.
Yep.
And gardens.
I hope I made Eileen proud. That was my goal. Make Eileen proud.
Absolutely. That's awesome. All right, cool.
I like if I just, we hardly ever read this. Sometimes there are comments in the poll.
Yeah.
But every now and then they crack me up. And Zagarath 2 days ago said, both Trello and Press seem great, but I went with Trello because A, it's free. We always wonder if price is a difference.
Yeah.
And B, Google Reader works fine in the web as it is. Like, I'm complacent. That's good.
Whatever. Works for me. This week, we ended up with just kind of a little confluence of events. And actually, both Ron and Gina, you two had calendar apps in there. And I was like, well, this is perfect because I've had a calendar app that I've always kind of had on the back burner. But it's one of the apps that I install almost first anytime I wipe my phone and start fresh or whatever. Wow. So I was like, okay, cool. Let's bring our calendar apps this week.
And it was funny because I had found this app last week when I was prepping my app for last week. I'm like, ooh, let me pocket that. I'll do it next week. And then I went to open the document this morning. I saw Gina had gotten in there already and put in a calendar. And I was like, and so for a moment, I'm like, do I find another app? And I'm like, no, head to head, let's do it. I'm gonna play. And then Jason stepped up, and so we got a theme.
Boom!
It's been a while.
Awesome.
All right. Awesome. So I'll kick it off because I'm the loser from last week.
Loser goes first.
Hoping to redeem myself. Business calendar, and there's a free version. There's also a $4.99 version. I was with the free version for the longest time, and then after a while, you just kind of like, I use it all the time. Like, of course it's worth it, and you actually do get some extra features. The free version is actually, it has some unintrusive ads, but it's fully functional aside from a few kind of bonuses for the paid version, things like drag and drop in your calendar, configurable font sizes. I wouldn't say that the extra features on the pro version are necessarily things that I absolutely have to have, but one of the things that I love about this app is the widget, and the pro feature does feature 11 different widget designs. So that I guess would be a feature, a reason for getting the pro version. But business calendar. So I'd say I use it more as a widget than I do as a calendar. So I'll just start there because this little screen to the right on my home screen is always there, and it's kind of my personal calendar. It's a scrollable widget. Looks really nice. It's very clean. I have the ability to kind of customize now all the different kind of widget profiles. I can go into this little gear up here, and it'll take me to the ability to kind of select my calendars, add buttons to it, change the font sizes, as well as change the design. If I pull this up, I think it'll show me all the different approaches for design, and I'll just go back with that one. But I like having this on my home screen. This is actually the app right in and of itself, which looks a little complicated here. Well, I mean, it looks like a calendar, but it looks, everything looks kind of condensed. If I hit there, it'll kind of show me just in a little pull up above the box what I have going on that day, depending on the calendars that I have. Let's see here. Did I just go out to settings? There we go. I can also go up here and select my different views, right? So I have my day view. I have my agenda, which is kind of, more along the lines of what I might see in that widget, depending on how I have it set up. Or the month view, which is kind of what we were looking at before. If I go into a particular, let's see here, let's go into a day. on a day that I have no events. Come on, give me events. Course, let's see here. I can show kind of everything that I have, or I can isolate it to different calendars. It's just for me, it's a pretty easy way to kind of skip through here. You can also activate and deactivate all of your different calendars down there at the bottom, and they color code it. In this view, it's kind of hard to see exactly how that color coding kind of comes through because there's just so much stuff here. But maybe in a week view, it might be just a little bit easier. Going into a week view, you actually do see the text. Kind of hard to see on the screen right now because it's all super small. But you can also kind of change the amount of time that you see in any given day. So there's a little slider down there, and you can kind of drag that back and forth if you want to kind of condense it to see more days in this example or less. A lot of different features. This is a drag and drop mode, so I can kind of work my way through here. And of course, it's lagging, but it has drag and drop mode, so you can basically grab items and kind of move them around. It's very nice. But ultimately, I love the widget. It's really the main reason that I do it. I put the widget on. I also have a widget on the front here right up at the very top, and I configured that to be just the next three things that happen to happen. It says plus one editor's meeting tomorrow at noon. Good to know. I'll make sure and be here for that. But you can, you know, you can customize that entirely to your own discretion. And I think the widgets are very powerful. Again, it is Business Calendar. It's free, as well as $4.99 in the Play Store. Check it out. I love it. That's cool. It.
All right. Calendar. Nice. Calendar's like a thing, like it's, you find the one that works for you.
Absolutely.
You make it work. And,
absolutely.
Well, my calendar app that I brought up actually is a little more than just a calendar app. It's called Zime, and it's spelled Z-I-M-E, and it's in beta, so, you know, beta. But it's actually a combination calendar and to-do app. So it's really, you know, some people, depends on what school you kind of subscribe to, but some people really like to manage tasks within a calendar standpoint. So listen, I need to do this thing by 5 o'clock tomorrow. I need to, you know, I need to do this by next Monday or whatever. And I particularly don't subscribe to it, but I do see the value of doing it because some way, if you're that sort of thinker, it can be helpful. What Zime does is it combines tasks and calendar items into, honestly, what is a unique UI, which I've never seen before. And that's really the thing that's getting me about apps now after how many years we've been doing this. I'm looking for the apps that don't look like the other apps. And so looking at Zime, and you can see here in the Google Play Store, immediately you can tell that it's a little different. I'll pull it up here on my tablet. Now, it is a phone. It is optimized for the phone, so it looks a little bigger on the tablet. They haven't tablet optimized it yet. But opening it up, basically, I was in the settings. Go away, settings. Okay. So opening it up, what you do is, there you go. You get this kind of, I don't even know how to describe it.
This is crazy sauce.
Rolodex.
Toilet paper roll.
Yeah, exactly. And so
it looks like the bendable screen.
Yes, it does, doesn't it? So like right about here is like the over the, is where the curve starts. And so you can see it kind of go up, but it's really cool, right? So here we see today is Tuesday, January 15th. And you see, I've got an event. I've got All About Android at 5:30. Going here tomorrow. I left the default stuff in here because I wanted to show, you know, kind of show it off, but it can show you, you can have tasks that have fixed time periods. So every day at 9 o'clock, I need to do this. You can just put up a simple task along the time. You can set up, you can associate specific times for things to happen, and it will tell you if something's late or hasn't happened yet, or just single events. But really the interface is what kind of grabbed me. What's cool, so if you just tap and drag, you go through the days and you can spin. Let's say I need to go all the way ahead. You can jump by hitting this down here. You see this little roadmap icon. So you can jump ahead a month, ahead a week, or back a week, or back a month, or just go today. So I'm just going to scroll back today. It's going to send me back today. I'm going to go back a week. It'll go back a week. So it's a real interesting way to move about within your calendar. If you need to add something, all you got to do is tap it in the calendar, and you see here it comes up. I can add an event, and just hit plus, and it starts adding it in. If I do that, it's not working there. There we go. Because I'm tapping on an angle. It's not because of a demo fail. And it makes adding in the information real easy. What you got, it kind of grays out the time that you've added it in here, and then you can enter in the title here, and then you can set the time for the event. And if you want, you can hit the button to go to more information about the event. And this is where you can identify a location, and it integrates with Google Maps, so you can say a specific place, add any notes, you know, how long the event will be, whether it's one time or recurring, if you want a reminder, all that sort of thing. And it, you know, makes it really easy to get all the details in there that you want. So that's one way to interact with the calendar. Another way to interact with the calendar is this little plus button. And if I hit this, I just get similar to the camera in the new Android camera. So I can either set a new task or a new event or a new all day event. So I'm going to do a new task, and it gives me that scrolled up to today because it already knows this is in the past. It's a little smarter. But here I can enter in the information for the title, the duration, when it starts, what the deadline is, what the priority is. So you can scroll across here. So it's a really interesting way to utilize the interface. It links directly to your Google account. So whatever so that's the one thing that was a little, and maybe it's in beta, they'll update this, but you're limited to any calendars that are associated to your Google account that is the primary one on your device. So if you're using a work calendar or some other account, pulling it in, I couldn't figure out an easy way to pull it in. It's got to be tied to your main Google account. And maybe that's something they're going to update as the beta progresses. But what's really neat is that once you get in there and once Zime keeps track of what you've been doing, you get this little graph, and it will basically show you how often you are late or on time. It gives you this nice little it gives you this nice little display based, and I don't have any data in here, but it will tell you how often you are completing tasks on time or not, and gives you some data visualization around your task completion stuff. So that's Zime. Right now it's free because it's in beta. I don't know if they have plans to make it paid or not, but it's just a different way to interact with your calendar, which I think was kind of neat. I kind of like the idea of pulling out my tablet and just going, okay, what am I doing today? And having the Rolodex fly. So yeah, pretty neat.
It's a cool like GPS metaphor that it's a road that you're kind of flying down a road.
Yeah, exactly.
Going forward in time.
Yep.
Forward in time.
Oh, and I failed to mention that it does have, which is, I keep forgetting to check, which I think is now you have to check, but it does have a widget. And Chad, if you can take my tablet again. So down here, it just gives you kind of an update of what you've got, and you get two choices. You get your to-dos and what's been done. And then you can add things directly from here. You can add tasks directly from the widget, and you can resize it however you want based off the new nifty.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So yeah. So
excellent.
Zime. Check it out.
Right on. So my calendar app, my pick of calendar app is called Agenda. It's Agenda Calendar. It's $1.99. This is a really popular calendar app on iOS, and it finally got ported over to Android. And there's basically two reasons why you'd like an app, right? It's looks or it's functionality or both. And in the case of Agenda, it's all about looks and not so much about functionality. Like this app only does kind of the bare minimum, right? So the two apps that you just saw probably definitely have more features than Agenda does. The reason why I love Agenda so much, and this might be the design snob in me, it's beautiful. It's just beautifully designed. There's tons of white space. The typography is beautiful. There's very few lines. And the main gesture that you have to know is swiping left to right. So you basically zoom from a big bird's eye view, so the year view, to the month view, to the week view, to today's view, to a single event view, which is really, really nice, because you really can like drill down that way. You install Agenda and it grabs all the calendars associated with your Google accounts. I've got two Google accounts off on my Android phone, and I have several calendars for each. I've got my Tripit calendar, my work calendar, my personal calendar, and my wife's calendar. It picks up all of those, and you can choose to say, make these calendars visible. Don't show me these calendars. I've got like sunrise and sunset. I disabled that because I don't need to see that on my Agenda. It basically, all Agenda does, it's very aptly named, is just show you a really beautiful, easy to see agenda for your day or week. I particularly like the week view. The add screens are, you know, to add an event screen, there's nothing here that you're not going to see just basically in Google Calendar. You can do recurring events and what time it starts and titles and choose the calendar you want to add it to. There's nothing totally really special there. You can jump to today, which they use an icon that is usually your location icon. So it's kind of this little bit of this metaphor of like where I am kind of in time or in space. Really like Agenda. Huge, biggest drawback, there's no widget. There's no widget yet. And actually, a developer in the Google Play Store said, like, okay, look, there's no widget. We know. We're sorry. If you buy the app, we promise we'll build one.
That's fair.
You have to launch the app in order to look at it. I'm on the road this week for business. I've got tons of meetings and shows and places to go. And I've been loving Agenda. I've actually been taking the time to launch the app. Now I've got the Google Calendar widget on one of my home screens, kind of big, and I've been opting to look at Agenda because I just like the way it looks. So this is just completely about looks for me. And that's basically it. I mean, there's no menus, there's no dropdowns, there's no pickers. The settings area is very, very sparse. I mean, you can tell that this was just, their goal was, we're just going to make something that looks really good and just tells you what you're doing, and that's it. So very few bells and whistles, but gorgeous.
I like this a lot.
Yeah, got to respect the app that just does what it does and does it well and easy. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at this, I'm definitely going to keep it installed. Like, I'll admit, like, business calendar, the main thing that I use it for is the widget. I don't go into the actual app and manage the calendar very much from there. But I don't do that very much from my mobile device.
Well, you're doing it from the desktop, right? I mean,
I manage mostly from the desktop. Yeah. And then if anything on the mobile, it ends up being like an agenda list. Like, what do I have in store today?
What do I have today?
Not looking at a big calendar and picking through dates and stuff. It's so much easier on the desktop. I'm going to keep this installed. This looks really good.
Cool.
It's really nice. You can vote for your favorite calendar app this week. Is it Business Calendar? Is it Zime, Z-I-M-E, or Agenda Calendar? Take a look at aaapoll.com/92. Today's episode is 92, so aaapoll.com/92, and let us know what your favorite app this week is.
And agenda calendar is running away with
boom,
it.
Early reports.
Well,
it is.
Now it's tied.
Yeah,
no,
Zime and agenda calendar kind of.
I love the early votes when it just seems like it's running away with it because it has three votes.
The early votes last week had me competitive.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Sure, you could go functional and beautiful like agenda calendar, or you can go wacky and crazy with Zime. Yeah.
Or one person wants a widget.
Right, yeah. My goal is the person who uses all the apps I recommend, and then they're sitting there in Zime with the weird keyboard, with the circle keyboard, trying to make it work. And then
they're so dedicated to Ron.
Exactly. And then I apologize.
They're like, all I have on my phone are Ron's
and they doesn't realize apps. That I'm just looking for apps that are just crazy, that are just
that radial interface to add the task in Zime like reminded me a lot of that crazy keyboard.
Exactly.
So kind of awesome. I see somebody trying
that's,
to use
that's
it.
That's Ron's thing.
Yeah, that's my beat.
He likes to make things difficult.
The crazy UI.
Cool. So we'll check in on that. Just real quick here, Reposter in the chat room gave us a link to an app that ties into what we were looking for earlier.
This isn't breaking, is it?
Sure. This is breaking news.
This is breaking news.
This is totally breaking news.
First breaking news of 2013, people. Chad thought he could sleep back there.
Yeah, I know.
He's on it. He's the developer in the Play Store answering comments like right away. Here's the breaking news.
So the voicemail from or the video mail from Jacob Loeb about finding definitions for words. Reposter in the chat room gave a link to an app called Word Lookup. And basically, this is exactly what you're talking about, Gina. Step one, hold and select a word, then choose share. Step two, select word lookup in the list. Step three, get the definition. So there you go.
Cool. So you can do it. Make the switch.
Three.
Yeah, and it looks like it pops up in front of the app that you're in, so it doesn't actually switch you to the separate dictionary app, which would be annoying. So this actually looks, from the screenshots, it looks really good.
Yeah, this is perfect, and this is just yet another example of how the audience of this show is so important to what we find and promote. That's part of the reason why I even bring in questions that I don't know the answer to I don't know if any of us know the answer to, because you guys are really smart. So thank you for finding that Reposter, and thank you to everyone that always pitches in. Next week, Tony Hannity's returns from
awesome.
Lazy
Love
Tech
Tony.
Guys. He's going to come into the studio and be with us and hang out for a little bit, talk some Android. I just want to make a really quick mention. We have a YouTube channel dedicated to the show now. Used to be that all Twit shows were on youtube.com/Twit, I believe. And now all shows are being broken out into their own YouTube channel. This allows you to... Oh, that's such cool art. I don't know who...
That's
did really all cool. that stuff, but
yeah,
that's
nice.
That's Tony Wang. Tony Wang helped.
Yay,
it
Tony.
With,
that's the, awesome. He made like custom art for all of these pages. It's great. So, anyways, thanks, if you're a fan of the show,
are they height? Are those actual relative heights there?
I think yes, it is.
I think I am.
You're the tallest back there.
I don't think so,
Gina. I don't think you're that short.
Mini.
Yeah,
I'm the mini in the group.
Gina, your Android avatar looks angry. I don't know why.
It does, right? The little antenna with the hairdo, it looks like my eyebrows are scowling. Yeah. Unlike Jason, my secret is I'm always angry.
Right. You're the polar, the opposite.
No, but seriously, go subscribe to it. I want us to be the most subscribed show on Twit. So
YouTube.com/allaboutandroid. Pretty easy to remember, right? If you subscribe to Twit and you're expecting to see Android, All About Android shows pop into your feed, you won't get them anymore because they're not posting there anymore. They will still be added to that playlist, but they are going to be posting to this account and to a playlist there as well. This goes for all shows, by the way. All Twit shows have new YouTube channels. I think there's a post on Inside Twit. At InsideTwit.com, is it? Chad, do you happen to know?
I don't know.
Is this breaking news?
No, this is not breaking news, Ron.
I was trying to buy you some time.
That would have. Dang it, that was a brilliant idea. Inside.twit.tv, is that it? Inside.twit.tv. Thank you. There is a post that details all of these YouTube channels. All right, spent a little bit longer on that than I wanted to.
That's all right. It was funny.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know what was fun?
Yeah.
This episode.
Yeah, it was. This was a fun episode.
Lots of fun.
Had a good time. Yeah.
Really appreciate it. Why don't you start first? Go ahead and plug.
Sure thing. So if you enjoy my antics, you can find me at about.me/RonXO, and that's where you can find me on Google Plus and Facebook and Twitter and all that fun stuff. And if you dig comic books, check out ifanboy.com, where I am found most days. So,
excellent. All right. And Gina, what do you have going on these days?
I hope folks will check out my app. It's a to-do list for Android. It's at todotext.com, todotxt.com. And on Wednesdays, I co-host This Week in Google with Leo and Jeff Jarvis. That's Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. We'll be on tomorrow, so I hope you'll join me then.
Fantastic, always. And Chad, what do you have going on?
I produce shows around Twit, so I work on Twit, MacBreak Weekly, Twig, this show, and a few others around the network. So you can find me working away there, and I do a Minecraft show called OMG Craft that you can
OMG find. Craft.
My favorite show about Minecraft.
His favorite topic.
Yeah.
You can find me at about.me/JasonHowell, or I'm on Twitter at Jason Howell. That is it for this week. Thank you so much for tuning in, downloading, however you get the show. You can leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. You can always send us an email, as well as a video mail, like earlier, at aaa@twit.tv. Just include a link to your video, and we'll play it on the show. The show can be found on Twitter. We are at Android Show. You can always find our show notes at twit.tv/AAA, as well as all of our past episodes there, YouTube, iTunes, all over the place, all over the internet anyways. And you can catch us live every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. Thank you so much. You have a great week, and we'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android. I don't know.